Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Why are so many race horses dying? 30 horses have died at the Santa Anita Racetrack in Southern California since last December. The horses had to be euthanized due to exhaustion and overdosing on performance-enhancing drugs. The Santa Anita Park Racetrack, located in Arcadia, California, offers some of the most prominent horse racing events in the country. On average, 10 horses died every week at U.S. racetracks last year. But New York Times reporter Joe Drape says when you add in training accidents and things that happen off track, that number rises to 25 a week. And he got that information by filing Freedom of Information Act requests. Horse racing is now a multi-billion dollar industry. So the question is, can it be reformed or should it be banned? Later in the show, we will debate that question. But joining us now is Joe Drape. He is a reporter for the New York Times sports section. He has written about horse racing since arriving at the Times in 1998. He is the author of three books about the sport, including the bestseller American Pharoah, the untold story of the Triple Crown winner's legendary rise. And Joe Drape joins us from New York. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Rose, good to talk to you again.
Well, it's great to have you back, Joe. You know, I heard you recently on the PBS NewsHour, and I just did not realize that horse racing is now a multi-billion dollar industry. Can you just give us an overview of how big and how profitable horse racing has become?
Yes, Rose. Basically, $15 billion is generated as an agribusiness. That's in sales of raising, breeding courses. $11 billion is bet at racetracks like Santa Anita and Golden Gate Fields there. You know, it's like anything else. It's not only the horse and the bet. It's the trainer. It's the grooms who take care of them. It's the farrier who shods them. It's the hay that's fed to them. You know, it is a multi-billion dollar industry. And in fact, I saw this fact that it does more than box office receipts in Hollywood does. So, you know, when you talk about banning and reforming, you're talking about turning around a big lucrative ship. And thus, that's where the problem is and the crux and where people are resistant to change in general.
We have heard a lot about the Santa Anita racetrack, which is in Southern California. Give us a sense, Joe, what is this racetrack like? How often do they have races? How many people does this racetrack attract?
You know, Santa Anita is one of the landmark racetracks in America. Seabiscuit raced there. It's right below the San Gabriel Mountains. It's totally beautiful, postcard pretty, has a long history, and it's pretty much the center of racing in Southern California and California in all. It's a very prestigious track. You know, now they race less because there's a horse shortage, and we'll talk about that later. But, you know, three, four, up to 5 days a week. It has a very robust following and crowd of, you know, not only people who are there just to admire the horses, but are people there to bet on it. It's really a jewel of a racetrack. And that's why, you know, a couple things happened to bring this unwanted attention on them. But these things were bound to happen. I understand you may have Rick Arthur on later. You know, in 2012, we did a year-long series on deaths at the racetrack. And, you know, Rick will tell you, he said he's been sitting there for decades waiting for people to notice how many horses die in the course of racing. And, you know, what we saw out there this spring and winter is a cluster that caught media fire. And you guys are a progressive state with a big population of animal rights activists. So it really ignited and the discussion was opened up again. But, you know, it happens all over the country. It just sometimes the clusters get media attention and the debate is brought to the forefront again.
Well, when I saw you on the PBS NewsHour, Joe, I had to stop the segment and rewind it because when you said that after filing Freedom of Information Act requests, You found that when you add in training accidents and things that happen off track, the number of horses that die in this country is about 25 a week. And I thought, wait, that can't be right. So that's right, 25 a week?
25 a week, and that was as of 2012, 2013. The industry uses the figure of 10 a week, and they will admit it's a conservative. They're not trying to hide it. It's a conservative number. Not every track reports. Not every track reports training accidents. Not every track reports deaths that happen 72 hours later. I would think between, I'm going to give them a little credit, between 2012, 13, and now that number's come down a bit. But, you know, I doubt it's come down to 10. And I think they will tell you it's not just 10 a week, that it's more than that. But yes, and this has been going on, Rose, forever. I mean, I've sat through congressional hearings myself three times since 1998. I have transcripts from congressional hearings that go back to the 70s and 80s. This is a problem that everybody has known for a long, long time and just have kicked down the road. And, you know, now we have an evolved consciousness as a society about animals and all kinds of things. And, you know, communication is quicker, social media amps up the speed of, you know, news and what happens. So, you know, this day of reckoning was coming, and now they need to decide if we're going to live or not die. And why it's really important that it's happening in California is, as you guys know out there, you have these ballot initiatives. It only takes 600,000 signatures to get an amendment on there that says, you know, quite simply, should horse racing be banned or should it live? And, you know, that's what they're trying to get ahead of right now.
You have been writing about horse racing for the New York Times sports section since 1998. Can you talk about what has changed since then, just in terms of the industry? Are there now more horses racing?
Over my time, and it's really interesting, I think this is the crux of the problems. When I started in 1998, there were 35,000 registered foals annually. That means horses bred to race and to race at racetracks. Now we're down to 20,000 registered foals. So the population, the horse population's almost cut in half. At the same time, they're racing more. I'm sitting in New York City right now, and within 200 miles, there is 9 racetracks running right now that you can bet on. So you got less horses, you have more racing. Hmm. It's expanded to year-round racing. You can bet every single day of the year somewhere. So, you know, that's put a stress on the horse population. There's more of a grind now. And when I started, horses took time off. They'd race maybe in the spring, then they'd send them back to the farm just to be horses for, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months, let them gamble in the field and stuff. You know, now they stay in racing and stay in what they call training longer than they ever did. And all these things are catching up. And when you look at Europe, where it's still, you know, it's as big as soccer in Europe. It is the major sport there. It's on television every weekend. And look at the model. A, they run on grass. B, they run these 5 or 6 day festivals. And then everybody goes back to what they call their yard. And these are farms where horses are allowed to be horses. And C, there's no drugs, or there's a very limited amount of drugs. There's more stringent rules and more, you know, punishing punishments. I mean, if you get caught cheating with a drug or using a painkiller, you're out of the sport. What we had up there in the middle of all this uproar about the dead horses, they closed the track for a week trying to figure it out. The very day it reopens, where there's satellite tracks there, every news person in the world who cares about this is there. The surveillance team looks in at a barn and catches a trainer doing something untoward, illegal, giving a horse a blood agent that was banned and was not supposed to be given. So, A, that kind of shows you how broken the system is, and this really tells you how terrible it is. The guy got 45 days. You do that in Europe, you'd be gone. You wouldn't be able to do that anymore. You wouldn't be allowed on the racetracks. And thus, that's why the death fatalities in Europe and most of the rest of the world are two and a half to five times less than they are in the U.S.
Wow. What are the rules around drugging horses in the United States?
Well, that's another part of the problem. There's no unified office. There's no commissioner. There's no one set of rules. There's 38 different jurisdictions, and the rules change from state to state. What goes on California is different than New York and Louisiana and Arkansas. So it's a mishmash of rules. You know, the other thing that happens, and when you talk about drugging a horse, is there's two kinds of drugging. There's performance enhancing, and that could be anything from blood doping to Viagra to rubbing cayenne pepper on the genitals of a horse to, you know, anything to get an edge. Now,
can I ask you, why do they run cayenne pepper on the genitals of a horse?
To make them uncomfortable and run faster. And so that is a smaller percentage of the drug problem in the sport. And that's really hard to detect, and your medical guys will tell you that. The more common thing that happens, and it goes back to the horse population being down and racing more, is they give horses painkillers and anti-inflammatories, all these things just to keep them running and in the racetrack. Now, it's one thing an NFL linebacker can come in Sunday and say, okay, doc, I'll take a cortisone to the knee. It's his choice, so he can play. It's another thing for these animals, these athletes who are equine athletes, to just be given this wholesale just to so he can make it to the racetrack, so the trainer can make money and the owner can make money. And you know what I've documented, other people have documented, there are barns of Hall of Famers out there that will give their whole barn thyroid medicine because it'll increase the metabolism, they think, not because they have a thyroid problem. It's just, you know, here, this may make them go faster. So, you know, that's to me what I think is the biggest crime is, and the thing that has really wreaked havoc on the industry, because, you know, there's probably 3 million people like me who follow the racing year round, who know what's going on at most tracks, is interested, may bet $2, may bet $200. But from May to June, the 5 weeks of the Triple Crown, that number swells to 30 million. And half of them, more than half of them, are women. And, you know, don't ask NBC about that. That's why they run a lot of their coverage on Bravo. And the fire they've been playing with all these years is, okay, if a horse breaks down in those Triple Crown races, you have just turned off and, you know, committed Harry Carey on your sport, because nobody wants to see an animal abused or die for the entertainment of us. And, you know, I have people ask me all the time, well, how can you do this? How can you actually enjoy the sport, write about the sport, when these things go on? And, you know, it's a question all of us face. And, you know, it's a tough one for me.
And you're so close to it. I mean, I just want to read from one of your recent pieces, Joe, last month, why so many horses have died at Santa Anita. You write about the morning of March 29th. The park was reopening for racing for the first time in 3 weeks after the deaths of 24 horses. National news reporters and animal rights activists were there. California regulators were watching a live surveillance feed of a trainer's assistant carrying a bucket into the stall of a horse named TikTok. Moments after the assistant left, a white foam was visible on the horse's lips, often a telltale sign of performance-enhancing drugs. Investigators later found syringes in the bucket, along with a fatigue-fighting agent known in racing parlance as a milkshake. And this is according to hearing transcripts from the state's Horse Racing Board. Can you tell us more about this milkshake?
Well, it's an alkalizing agent, and it comes in different forms. In the older days, or the more recent old days, you had put it down with a tube, and it was a mixture of soda, bicarbonate, baking soda. Now it comes in tubes, and you can squirt it in, and it's more gel. And the theory of it is, just like marathon runners, that it busts through your lactic acid and gives you a boost that you can run through fatigue. You know, and again, this is the thing that nobody really knows if any of this really works. I mean, there's anecdotal evidence that all this works, but that's become sort of the environment at a racetrack, is that people will try things. I mean, a couple of years ago when we were working on the series, they were using venom of some frog serum, some frog venom. And, you know, nobody really knew if it worked, but somebody convinced somebody. And so all of a sudden it kind of spread through the country.
What is it like to report on these issues, Joe? How easy is it to get information from these horse racing facilities about fatalities? How accurately are these deaths recorded and reported?
It's increasingly becoming more transparent, and that is a good thing. You know, one of the reasons I like the sport is people are accessible. I mean, as long as you're up in the morning and you go to the barns and they're out working and you let them do their job, then you come sit down and you talk to people about this. The Jockey Club does a good job of building this equine injury fatality base. And, you know, they put the arm on racetracks to report. There's research going in it. There's some good things happening in there. But, you know, it's inevitable in most things. A few bad apples spoil the whole bunch. And they have just had some impetuous bad actors that keep doing the same things and keep getting caught and keeping this sort of seedy underbelly into the mainstream. And, you know, I hear it from both sides. I mean, like I said, I have it complicated. I've owned horses. I grew up with it. My dad taught me how to read the racing form. I've done this for a long time, and they say, well, you hate racing, and you're killing the sport. And first, I like racing. And second, they're doing a good job killing their sport themselves. They don't need my help.
Hmm. What are some of the other reasons why so many horses are dying? As you said, Joe, it did not just start with Santa Anita. According to the New York database on equine deaths in July, 12 horses died at New York State racetracks in under a week. So why are so many of these horses dying? I mean, what you revealed about how they just don't get the breaks that they used to get, what are some of the reasons?
Well, they're fragile animals. You got a 1,200-pound athlete that is going 35 miles an hour atop of an ankle the size of a Coke bottle, all right? It's not like humans. Humans you can't put back. Humans you can go get pins and plates in, and, you know, you could fix and heal a human bone. The horses need to be standing. So what happens is bones break, and if you can't fix the bone, the truly humane thing is to euthanize them. And, you know, I guess this is good to remind your listeners, and the Times always has me do this in the stories, is when they die, it isn't like they fall over and die, or what happens is they get severely injured and they are euthanized and put down as the humane thing to do. So, you know, I mean, if you – whoever comes up with the reason and the way of preventing – horses of dying in racing to take the fatalities down to zero, they're going to be millionaires and beloved. A lot of things happen. And, you know, again, the horseman's side, and this is true, they say, well, if you got 100 horses out in the field, some are going to die too. They're going to step in a hole. They're going to get hit by lightning. They're going to run into each other. And that is true too. I mean, nature does take its course. But, you know, I can't tell you the exact reason. But it's just not me. It's now the industry saying, I mean, in the response to the deaths in Santa Anita, the Stronach group went as close to putting in international rules as anybody else in the country has. And, you know, that has limited the injuries back there. And, you know, most people have great hope that if you did put in international standards, if you did put in universal and uniform rules and punishments, you could at least bring that number way, way back.
Joe, since you report on this so extensively, I'm sure you've seen some of the undercover investigations from groups like PETA. And I just watched a couple last night. I mean, they're just horrific. In one of the videos, an assistant trainer is quoted as saying, "You could not believe how many horses they hurt and kill before they even get to the racetrack. It's mind-boggling." What do you think of some of these undercover investigations that show just brutal and extreme treatment of horses? Is this unique? Is this common? What should we make of these videos?
You know, it shows the horror of it, but that is the point of those videos, Rose. I mean, this isn't a balanced look, and it's not a look put in context. Yes, that stuff happens. It is awful. Again, they have tried to stem the tide on it. They've done a good job, but it keeps going back to those persistent bad actors that basically the system and infrastructure now cannot run them or has been unwilling to run them out of the industry, to say, look, you cannot have stalls at my racetrack. You cannot race at my racetrack. There's no group that says sending a horse to slaughter, a commissioner, or the guy who wields the hammer said sending a horse to slaughter gets you banned and everything taken away. It's just nobody's in charge and nobody's willing to really bring the hammer down on these guys. And they're going to keep having these problems until they do.
Are there any rules about how these horses are bred? Because the other disturbing footage in these undercover videos is how a bunch of men are basically around these horses and they kind of put one horse on top of the other. And how common is that?
Well, Rose, thoroughbred racing is one of the last sport animal breeding things that insists they do it the old-fashioned way, just like you would if you were two horses in a field. You know, quarter horses, you can use test tubes, semen samples, inject, IVFs, all that stuff. You know, this is an old sport. This is America's first sport. It's the only sport ever run out of the White House. Andrew Jackson ran a stable out there. It is part of the tradition. It's part of the American character. Why there's men standing around, and it's a fascinating process, is several million dollars are at stake when a mating happens. Mare has chosen, is brought in. The whole facility has rubber and foam padding. There's five or six guys to help the stallion mount the mare without hurting her. There's somebody with the test tube making sure the deed was consummated, and there's video on it. And this is all because of the insurance involved on this. You know, you got to prove that this happened on there. And these horses, some of them go through the ring and get $2 million, $3 million, and you know, in the 80s and 90s they were fetching $12 and $13 million, and these were just 2 year old horses or 1 year old horses, yearlings, who had never really been to a racetrack and who had never had a saddle on their back. They were betting on, you know, the breed. Wow. The pedigree.
Joe, before we go to break, this is a multi-billion dollar industry. Let's say it's Santa Anita, which is one of the most prominent horse racing events in the United States. How much money are we talking for the trainers and just the racetrack and other people involved?
Well, you know, here's the rule of thumb, okay? It's Santa Anita is probably $100 a day rate, give or take 20 up and down. Vet bills, I've seen vet bills, depending on who the trainer is, could be as low as $300 or as high as $3,000. And that's for various medications. The rule of thumb is look at the trainer and jockey standings. The trainer gets 10% of the purse. The jockey gets 10% of the purse. The agent of the jockey gets 25% of his 10%. So there's definitely a trickle down there. But, you know, there are trainers and jockeys who make a lot of money, millions, annually, and they deserve it if they've won these races, and they're athletes and they're businessmen too. But, you know, again, you're looking at $15 billion altogether, $11 billion bet on it. States take a cut out of it. The racetrack takes a cut out of it. That's the other thing complicating reform is nobody wants to let go of the purse strings and say, oh, that comes out of your end. That doesn't come out of my end. So, you know, the bureaucrats and the politicians are just as responsible as the horse people in this.
Joe Drape has been reporting on horse racing since he joined the New York Times in 1998. He is the author of three books about the sport. And today we are talking about why so many racehorses are dying. Do you think that this industry can be reformed, or should it be banned? Coming up after a break, we will speak with Dr. Rick Arthur. He's the equine medical director at the School of Veterinary Medicine at UC Davis, and Patrick Battuello, founder and director of the Horse Racing Wrongs. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion, or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to yourcall@kalw.org, or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or tweet us at yourcallradio. The second and final of the July Democratic debates takes place tonight in Detroit at 5 o'clock Pacific time. During the debate, you can follow NPR's checking of facts and analysis of the candidates' remarks by going to the live web stream on the right side of our website, kalw.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with teachers about the growing teacher movement across the country. Over the past few years, hundreds of thousands of teachers have protested low pay, school closures, and budget cuts. We're going to talk about what is next for this growing movement as teachers prepare to go back to school. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can send us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's show, we're talking about why so many racehorses are dying. Can this industry be reformed, or should it be banned? If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today we're joined by Joe Drape. He has been reporting on horse racing since he joined the New York Times sports section back in 1998. He is the author of three books about horse racing, including the best-selling American Pharoah, The Untold Story of the Triple Crown Champion's Legendary Rise. And now I would like to welcome two other guests to the show. Dr. Rick Arthur is the equine medical director at the School of Veterinary Medicine at UC Davis. Dr. Arthur is a full-time advisor to the California Horse Racing Board. It's a state agency that is supposed to ensure the viability and safety of the California horse racing industry. Hi, Dr. Arthur. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Patrick Battuello, founder and president of Horse Racing Wrongs. This is a nonprofit committed to eradicating horse racing in the United States. Through Freedom of Information Act reporting, Patrick and his team confirm and expose horse racing deaths across the country. And Patrick joins us from Albany, New York. Hi, Patrick. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Dr. Arthur, let us start off with you. You're joining us from Santa Anita. We were talking with Joe about why so many horses have been dying. And one important point he made is that you now have about 20,000 horses bred to race even more races. They're racing more. They don't take as many breaks. How do you explain this? Why are so many horses dying today? And it's not just today, as Joe said. This has been happening.
Well, actually, there's fewer horses dying today than there were even 10 years ago. So this is an issue that horse racing has been dealing with, certainly in the last 10 years. If anybody is interested, should go to the Jockey Club Welfare and Safety Summit website and can explain some of the issues that have been addressed by the racing industry for the last 10 years. But this is actually going to be the second lowest number of fatalities in California in the last since 1990. Even after the cluster of fatalities at Santa Anita. And I think there's a little bit of confusion about what happened to bring this to everybody to the light, and that was the fact that we had a track that was not in good condition because of the rain. But what it did is it exposed the underlying fatality rate in horse racing that I think a lot of the general public was unaware of.
And Dr. Arthur, as you know, Joe Drape says that based on his FOIA requests, when you add in training accidents and things that happen off track, the number of horses that die a week, it's about 25. He said that's gone down. But 25 a week in 2012 to 2013, that's a lot of horses.
Well, that would be a lot of horses, and I don't know the validity of that data, but you did need a Freedom of Information Act in California because we've been publicizing training and racing fatalities since the early 90s, and not only do we have racing training fatalities, but we actually report any death within our enclosure, which includes colitis, pneumonias, neurological problems as well. So we've certainly been transparent many years.
Patrick, you and your team file FOIA requests to expose horse racing deaths across the country. I mean, I'm just on your website right now, and you have just lists of the names of horses and when they died. What can you tell us about why so many horses are dying?
I'll get to that in a moment, Rose, but first off, I'd like to... not to be contentious here, but those numbers are vastly understated. Mr. Drape's number of 25 per week, it's actually closer to 40 per week. I confirm roughly 1,000 racing or training deaths annually across America, roughly 1,000. Those are confirmed. When you add in the data that I do not have access to, for instance, there are some states who do not submit training deaths from my FOIA request. There are at least twice as many private training facilities across the country as there are open to the public racetracks. I estimate that it's well over 2,000 horses just racing or training killed in America every year. So that's number one.
And can you hold on that point, Patrick, because this is really important. Joe, what are your thoughts on this? If you came up with 25 a week based on FOIA requests, what do you think about Patrick saying that it's actually 40 a week?
Let's just start, and I'm with Rick on this too. California has been transparent for a long time. Let's just say too many horses are dying. We don't need to quibble with the numbers. I know I can't vouch for his numbers. I know we ran computer databases and wrote FOIs and had the full muscle of the New York Times behind it to come up with our numbers. So let's not really. The point is, too many are dying, and the number could be brought down.
Okay, right.
All right.
Hold on a minute. Patrick, go ahead, make your second point.
Well, all of my numbers are confirmed directly from FOIA requests. So my killed in action list going back to 2014 to this, you know, I always say that I am not personally infallible, of course, but to date the lists have been, with the exception of maybe two horses I've had to remove in the past 5 years. I've documented over 5,000 confirmed kills, again, just racing and training since 2014. So, you know, again, I do agree with Mr. Drape on that point. You know, what's the difference really between 40 a week and 25 a week? The point is, this is not getting safer, so I do take issue with Dr. Arthur's assessment. I'll just give you Santa Anita. For the past three fiscal years, just racing and training, mind you, from 2015, 2016, 16, 17, 17, 18, 57 dead, 54 dead, 37 dead. So all this talk about a spike or a spate at Santa Anita, this being an anomaly, couldn't be any further from the truth. In fact, Dr. Arthur at one point called it a blip on the radar. It's not. It's business as usual. Horse racing kills horses inherently.
Dr. Arthur, what's your response?
I never would say blip on the radar.
Do you want to? Can you respond to Patrick's comment saying that horse racing kills horses inherently?
If you race horses, you are going to have injuries to horses that are catastrophic and are not salvageable. And that's going to be a reality of it. We've decreased the number of fatalities in California by 50% in the last 10 years. We're still at a higher level than we are internationally, and I think that we certainly can get down to half again as to what we have today. And I think that's obtainable, and that's the direction that the industry has been striving for. I do agree with Joe Drape that making changes in this industry is very frustrating because there's so many different interests involved. But I think we've made some pretty dramatic strides in the last few years, and I actually see a silver lining in this incident at Santa Anita, because some of the changes many of us have been advocating for a number of years are now obtainable, whereas they weren't before. It's an old-fashioned industry. I think this was a wake-up call that business as usual is no longer acceptable.
Can you tell us, what are some of these dramatic strides? What are the changes?
Well, first of all, you have to have a cultural change, and that is that the safety of the horse has to come before winning races. That's going to be a hard change to get everybody on board. I think some of the successes we had at Santa Anita the last part, half of the meet were because trainers were paying attention, and I think some of our failures were because trainers, a small group of trainers, weren't paying attention. Most importantly is the reduction in the use of permitted medications, therapeutic medications, where we're going to be more aligned to international standards, which don't have thresholds for nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories and steroidal anti-inflammatories, such as cortisone. Our horses can't talk to us, so the way that the veterinarians can identify and trainers and jockeys can identify that a horse has a soundness issue is by signs of inflammation, either a swelling or heat in a limb or unsoundness during traveling. And by eliminating those permitted medications, I think we're going to be able to identify horses that shouldn't train and hopefully remove those from training and racing. I think we've been fairly successful in California with some of the more recent changes we've made. It's a big change. It's a lot of work, and frankly, we need more trained veterinarians to examine horses independently of the attending veterinarian and the trainer.
Patrick, your organization, Horse Racing Wrongs, wants to eradicate horse racing in the United States. This is a multi-billion-dollar industry. So let's just say, until that happens, what kinds of changes would you like to see?
There are no changes acceptable. So this is an uncompromising position that we have. And I want to go back to something that Mr. Drape said a few minutes ago. He called this an old sport, a first sport, part of the American character, tradition, using words like that. Look, this is animal exploitation, animal cruelty, and animal killing. It is no different at all from greyhound racing, which is currently banned in some 44, 45 states, and most recently was voted down by an overwhelming margin in the state of Florida, which will shutter 11 of the nation's final 17 tracks. It's no different than Ringling Brothers, which is gone. It's no different than SeaWorld, which was exposed by Blackfish and is in decline. This is exploitation and cruelty. We've got to stop calling it a sport. That's the way it's been sold to us for 150 years. Okay, we have been conditioned from birth in this country to look at this as a sport, indeed the sport of kings. In fact, this is exploitation and cruelty for an archaic, largely non-viable gambling business. Okay, and I say non-viable because the bulk of U.S. racing is heavily subsidized. Not in California necessarily, but certainly in Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, West Virginia, Louisiana, I could go on. Okay, heavily subsidized. And I'll give you an example here in New York. We have 11 racetracks. It is no exaggeration to say that if not for the corporate welfare that's flowing in from the slots machines, that's directly, you know, beefing up purses and for breeding incentives, 9 of those 11, all 7 harnessed for sure and likely Finger Lakes and Aqueduct would have closed years ago. Similar story in many states. So this is an industry that is resting on a house of cards. The demographics are poor going forward. They're not drawing the younger generations, the millennials, in. And that's twofold. One, there is certainly more competition for the gambling dollar with casinos and lotteries, and soon we'll be able to bet on basketball, football, and baseball legally. But the second component is there are changing sensibilities regarding animal exploitation, most especially regarding entertainment. So this industry will not survive long term, and we are here to give it a push.
That is Patrick Battuello. He's founder of Horse Racing Wrongs. They're committed to eradicating horse racing in the United States. Let's get a response from Dr. Rick Arthur, who is an advisor to the California Horse Racing Board, and then we'll take calls. Dr. Arthur?
Sure. I became a veterinarian because I love horses. I was raised on a horse ranch, and I love horse racing as a sport. I will say that gambling pays for our sport, so it's a combination of sport and business. Certainly, it couldn't survive without the gambling aspect. But I am confident enough about being able to protect horses that I would have no qualms if I was not in this regulatory position to go back and owning horses and racing horses again. I think it's a beautiful sport. Horses love to run. They enjoy it. They're competitive. They've been bred to run for a long period of time, and I think it would be a travesty if horse racing went away. There's certainly economic pressures on horse racing that I think the industry's done a terrible job of addressing. But having said that, is horse racing can be reformed. And that's what I've been doing for the last 12 years. That's why I left private practice to take this particular position. And I think we've been successful, and I expect to continue to be successful going forward, making racing safer.
Well, let's take a caller, and then we'll get responses from our guests. Let's go to Ann in Berkeley. Hi, Ann. Thank you for holding.
Hi. I've actually rescued 3 ex-racehorses. I love thoroughbreds. I grew up showing horses, and at that time, all the horses in the show ring were thoroughbreds. Now they have a lot of horses bred, different warm blood horses in the show ring, so there's less of demand for thoroughbreds. I think most people that are at the track, the trainers and the vets, who I know a few of them, love horses and treat the horses very well. You have to understand that the horses are a commodity, and while they're being raised and they're valuable, they're treated very well. My problem with the racetrack situation is that when the horses are no longer able to race, they're expendable. Hmm. And that's how I've gotten my horses. But most of those horses are taken away in the middle of the night. They end up at auction, and they're sold basically to people who take them to the feedlots and Mexico border and Canadian border, and basically they pump them up with food and sell them by the pound in those other countries where slaughter is still legal. Hundreds of thousands of horses are slaughtered every year, not just race horses. And they're slaughtered very inhumanely, like with hammers and things like that, because it's expensive to buy the medicine to euthanize them humanely. And so my issue with, you know, the horse, the racetrack, is that there should be some place these horses are making money for the owners. There should be some sort of fund to take care of them. I know a lot of the trainers try to find homes for these horses because the trainers care about the horses. But the owners are paying a bill, and once that horse is not making them money and winning at the races, they're expendable, and they tell the trainers just to get rid of them. And the trainers feel that pressure. So I can't put this all on the trainers. A lot of the trainers try to go through CANTER, which is a horse rescue group, and I've been to the track, and I got a horse that way. Hmm. And they try to get homes for these horses. But I also got a horse from an auction that ended up not being taken at a CANTER rescue event and ended up at an auction, and I got the horse before somebody from a feedlot got the horse. And so, you know, this is a larger problem than just what's going on in the track.
Well,
you know, these
yeah.
horses need to be taken care of.
Thank you for calling in, and you raise a couple of important questions. Joe Drape. Joe, again, has been writing about horse racing since he joined the New York Times since 1998. At what point is a horse no longer able to race? Because the horses that died at Santa Anita were 3 or 4 years old. Is that young for horse racing? Is that common, 3 or 4 years old?
It is common. They start running at 2. 3 is the Triple Crown year, so that's their adolescence. 4, their mature horses. You know, there are horses that can run up to 8, 9, 10, 11, and that have done so. Wow. Back to what Patrick and Rick said. I mean, Rick, they are transparent. They've been trying to do the right thing out there. Patrick's right. A lot of these tracks can't exist and shouldn't exist. They're propped up by slot machines. And society has evolved. People don't want to see. You know, I grew up with the circus, no circus. What needs to happen, and what needs to happen fast, and we're at the critical mass right here, is there needs to be a disruption where the weak, trimming of the industry. Tracks shouldn't be propped up anymore. There should be harder rules, bigger punishments, less tracks, less racing, and this will get a little bit in the weeds, but there should not be claiming races. There should be handicap races where that takes the commodity out of the horse. You're not trying to get rid of a horse. So there's a lot of work to do, but it can be done. And, you know, Patrick's not going to agree with Rick, and Rick's not going to agree with Pat. But if you work the middle, there's a lot of room for improvement.
And we'll get there in a minute, but I also want to make sure we address the rest of Ann's question. What are your thoughts, Joe, about her concerns about what happens when the horse is no longer able to race?
It happens, and you see those videos, and it is true, and I get called several times a month about various ones. But at the same time, there are now rescue groups that are industry funded. There are private groups and nonprofits that are industry funded. I believe, and Rick will know more about this, as an owner on your papers, you can say, return the horse to me when he no longer is available to race, and we will take care of him either in our farm or repurpose him to what Ann's talking about, hunters, jumpers. I mean, everything's not horror and everything's not hunky-dory. There always is a middle in everything. So, yeah, that is something that they have taken aim on and worked on.
Last month, Governor Gavin Newsom of California signed a bill that would allow the California Horse Racing Board to suspend horse racing licenses when it's necessary to protect the health and the safety of horses and riders. Joe, just quickly, what can you tell us about this and who oversees this?
Well, it's Rick's the better guy to ask this. It's his overlords. Rick, you go ahead and take this.
Yeah, this was a bill that was put in place that allowed the horse racing board to stop racing after a license had been granted. I frankly don't think it goes far enough. I think there were days we raced in Santa Anita this winter where the stewards should have had the authority to say we're not racing today. Historically, when tracks are bad, it's the jockeys that refuse to ride rather than the racing commission or the board of stewards who represent the racing commission at the racetrack say, whoa, this is not a safe surface. So I do think that horse racing has to examine, particularly in California where our tracks are designed for dry weather, and when we get wet weather, they have to be managed in a way that frankly makes them less safe. So the impetus for the new law was to give the Horse Racing Board authority to do that in a very short period of time.
And Dr. Arthur, can I ask you, just because we're almost out of time, Joe said that in Europe, if we have, if there's major accidents, the trainers are just banned. But that's not the case here. Why is that? I mean, one example of this is Jerry Hollendorfer. In June, he was barred from training horses after his 4th horse died at Santa Anita. 2 of his horses died at Golden Gate Fields in Northern California. Last week, a judge regranted his permission to train at the Del Mar racetrack. why? I mean, do you think that, like in Europe, someone like Hollendorfer should no longer be able to train horses?
Well, the difference is that we have state-regulated horse racing in California, so they have due process, and that's frankly what the judge ruled in the Hollendorfer case. In Hong Kong, for example, and in France, they're NGOs and non-governmental organizations. They don't have the same due processes that they have in the U.S. So Hollendorfer is a perfect example. He used the legal system to work his way around a prohibition at Del Mar Racetrack, and he's probably going to get the same treatment at Santa Anita when they come back this October for the Breeders' Cup.
So, Dr. Arthur, you believe that this industry can be reformed to prevent horses from dying?
Yes, I do. I think it can. It's either going, in fact, just last year I gave a presentation at the RCI where I said we're either going to change or we're going to die. Hmm. And I think that may be the only area of agreement I have with Patrick.
And Patrick, you do not believe this can be
deal
reformed.
For equine safety last year, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. This is absurd. The only difference here is they are being exposed for what they are, the horse racing industry. That's the only difference here. Horses have always died. The CHRB has known about dead horses because it's their numbers, their statistics. They've averaged 250 deaths at California tracks going back to 1998, over 5,000 dead horses in California since 1998. And I want to just one other point here. Dr. Arthur talks about horses being born to run. I find this shameful for a veterinarian to be saying something like this. These horses are kept locked in a tiny 12 by 12 stall alone for over 23 hours a day. They exhibit stereotypies and vices, the same that we saw with the Ringling elephants and the SeaWorld orcas, cribbing, bobbing, weaving, pacing, kicking. They're going mad, okay? And to say that they're born to run when they can't even get out of their stalls, there's no turnout for these animals, it's cruel. It's cruel from the start, and people need to know that. Okay, we got to stop calling them athletes and stop calling this a sport. This is animal cruelty. An equine veterinarian who I testified with before the New York State Senate about a month ago likened keeping a 1,000-pound animal in a 12-by-12 stall for over 23 hours a day to putting a child in a 4-by-4 closet for that same amount of time. Can you imagine that? Mm. Okay, so we have to stop thinking about this as a sport that needs to be reformed. Well, and what other sport on this planet do we commodify the athletes, make them literal chattel? They're bought, sold, traded, and dumped at the owner's whim. And what other sport are they whipped, beaten for motivation? And what other sport are they drugged and doped without consent? What other sport are they kept confined and isolated for over 23 hours a day? And in what other sport are 5 or 6 athletes dying every single day on America?
Patrick, we are out of time, but we will continue to follow this and we'll definitely do another show about this. Patrick Batuello is founder of Horse Racing Wrongs. They're committed to eradicating horse racing. Dr. Rick Arthur is the equine medical director at the School of Veterinary Medicine at UC Davis and an advisor to the California Horse Racing Board. And Joe Drape has been reporting on horse racing for the New York Times sports section since 1998. Thank you all for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.